Just the last few days, Ken Griffin at the Davos meeting said, hey, folks, we could be in 1920s territory.
This is not a parallel to the 1920s in terms of the recklessness of the private capital markets. It's a story of the recklessness of government spending. Within the private sector, there's a huge question as to where AI will take us. And I was carefully taking notes and listening to what Larry has to say or to what Madame Lagarde has to say, because this is one of the big issues of our moment. Will AI create the productivity acceleration that is honestly just hoped for in Washington and in the halls of government around the world as a way to overcome the profligate spending that we're currently engaged in?
So what he went on to talk about there in some of those, that panel, they didn't come to the same conclusion. They said, no, we think that AI is going to be able to do this, so everything's going to be fine. But what he's saying was, and what I think is the really big alarm bell that was missed by a lot of people, it's not just that we're in 1920s territory, but it's why we're in 1920s territory. It's not that private equity is having a problem and they could overspend, but it's that the government spending of these different countries is overextended. And so the mechanisms that we've used, like in the 2003 financial crisis, to get out of that with quantitative easing, et cetera, you can't write your way out of it anymore because it's the banks themselves that are compromised. And so if AI doesn't provide to be the savior, as he said, then we are screwed. How do you see it?
Well, he's not being completely honest about private equity. Private equity has been benefiting from quantitative easing behind the scenes for months. Bessent has gone in and rescued private equity repeatedly over the last 6 months. It's not just the banks. It is the governments. It's all of them. All of them together, including his friends and the people sitting on that stage, especially somebody like Larry Fink. They're all in this. And yes, it is going to collapse. There's no question about it. And we're headed into that territory. But no one is going to admit that publicly. Look, back in June of 1929, Secretary Mellon, this was the Secretary of the Treasury, under Secretary or President Hoover, he gave a speech in June of 29, and he was sent to give the speech to quell rumors of impending disaster, problems in the marketplace that had to be addressed, and the Federal Reserve's mismanagement and so forth. So he gave a speech and he said, ladies and gentlemen, prosperity is unbroken in this era. In other words, we in the United States are going to continue to enjoy the prosperity and good times that we've had to this point in perpetuity. And everybody gave him a standing ovation. Now, why do I know this? Because one of my great grandfathers was present for that speech. He lost $4 million in 1929. He trusted Mellon. Mellon was lying. And when FDR became president, he went after Mellon. He tried very, very hard to put Mellon in jail. And he richly deserved to go to jail. And I think that one of the things that keeps the printing press going is that all of the people in private equity, as well as in the banking system and government, they're all afraid that when the truth finally hits and things collapse, that they are going to be on the proverbial chopping block. And at some point in all of these countries in the West, there's going to be a tennis court moment. This is what happened during the French Revolution. Go back and look up tennis court moment when the delegates finally said the king has lost his mind. Nothing's going to change. We're going to have to take control before everything is destroyed. And that's how you got the French Revolution. I think you're going to see something similar in Europe and here in the United States, but not until it really strikes. And it hasn't struck yet.
Well, and maybe we're getting closer to that too, because I couldn't help but thinking as you're talking there, the shivering parallels between what President Trump is saying on a regular basis about how, man, we are winning, so we're going to get tired of winning, and our economy is going great, and every speech he gives, just the one he gave two nights ago, yeah. Same kind of situation. Man, we are doing great. Everything's coming. The prices are coming down. Inflation, all the indicators, everything. He's just saying everything's going great, even though when I go to the store, I don't quite see it that way. But well, so far, it hasn't collapsed.
It's not just the store. This morning, and it's too bad I don't have it in front of me. I didn't know you were going to go down this route. But I saw a graph this morning was put together by financial firms showing the dollar dropping in value. And it's now hit a low that we haven't seen since 2022. The dollar's in a lot of trouble. It's falling like a rock. Now, will it go away overnight? Will it completely collapse overnight? No. But we're on the same road that Japan is. And people here in the United States don't seem to be aware of it. And I think that's what Griffin was trying to say in a roundabout way, but he wasn't prepared to go as far as I have. There you go. That's pretty good. U.S. dollar in 2025. So look at the chart. It's very obvious. And here's President Trump telling us the dollar is strong. It's stronger than ever and everything's going great. Okay. Thanks, President Trump. Appreciate your interest in our economy.
Economic security, yeah.
Yeah, but things aren't quite as you suggest they are. You know, it's always a good idea to be truthful, even if the news is bad. The truth is unassailable. It'll defend itself and try to identify with it. That's not popular right now because people are very upset, but they haven't gone crazy yet. In other words, we haven't yet reached lunatic proportions, which is what happened in France in 1789, 90, 91. People finally said, that's it. And they went over the cliff, so to say, into a total revolution. I would not exclude that right now in the countries of Western Europe and the United States.
Well, listen, Doug, you mentioned, I mean, Gary found that chart right there. That was also a comment by Peter Schiff, who was pretty adamant about it. I mean, you say no one's telling the truth. He's coming pretty close to in this clip right here.
The world is now pulling the rug out from under the U.S. The dollar is going to collapse. The dollar is going to be replaced by gold. Central banks are buying gold
to back up their currencies. True.
They're getting rid of dollars. They're getting rid of treasuries. We are headed for a economic crisis, again, that will make the 2008 financial crisis look like a Sunday school picnic. The biggest difference between the crisis that we're about to have and the one we had back then is this one is all in America. It's not going to be exported to the rest of the world. It's not a global financial crisis. It's an American financial crisis.
Now that was this morning, and gold was trading at $5,100 an ounce then. Subsequent to that, it went to $5,400. I think it dropped a little since I made this screenshot here, but that is an astronomical rise, which of course is because central banks are buying up the gold around the world because they are fearful that the dollar is losing. And to me, Doug, this could just spur a panic, and this could continue going this direction at the expense of the dollar.
Well, that's true, but keep in mind, and this is something just to check it, make sure that we've got it right here. Central banks in a number of states over the last 3 or 4 years have been buying gold, and everybody doesn't seem to understand it. I don't know why we don't understand it. I don't know why people refuse to bring it up. But central banks in Poland and Russia and India, any number of countries have been buying vast quantities
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now we supposedly have more gold than anybody else, but we've never been able to audit the thing. And remember that Dr. Ron Paul predicted, this is 10, 15 years ago, that eventually gold would hit $6,000. And everybody sort of looked at him as though he had a large, you know, hole in his head. Right now, gold and silver are going bizarre. Now, the only thing that he said that isn't true is that the dollar is no longer the reserve currency. That's not true. Gold is effectively the reserve currency now. That's what Nassim Taleb has been saying for God knows how long, and nobody's wanted to listen. And silver is important because silver sits at the intersection of three critical categories that people don't normally understand: monetary metal, that is, you know, basic currency, industrial commodity, and strategic mineral. You just think, every F-35 jet contains silver, every satellite contains silver, every missile guidance system contains silver. Solar alone will consume 20% of the annual silver production by 2027. The math doesn't work without new supply, and we're running out of supply.
Yeah, and so how do you get to that tipping moment? Because you can't keep going in these directions too long, because at some point, I mean, the dollar is going to continue to weaken, and it's going to, interest rates are going to go up, then prices are going to go up, and then you get where it actually affects Main Street America. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think the unquestioning trust in dollar-denominated reserves is gone. In other words, people always looked at the dollar and said, oh, sure, there may be a problem here, there, or something, but the United States is the strongest economy. The United States is the strongest military. The United States is still the center of innovation and so forth. That's no longer widely believed. The American brand has been badly harmed over the last 30 years, specifically over the last 20. And I don't see any evidence that that's going to change. So I would argue that the dollar really died in February 2022. And what we're watching now is the funeral procession.
And by the way, the funeral procession is picking up some speed, because here in just the last few days, you've had Canada has inked a bunch of deals with BRICS member China. You've had the EU ink deals with BRICS member India. You have Keir Starmer, who's right now in China, inking more deals. People are starting to look in other areas besides the U.S. for economic stability. Once that starts happening, I mean, it does seem to be inevitable that at some point that the absence of the trust in the dollar is going to be exposed. And I don't think we can recover from it, Doug. What do you think?
Well, you just uttered a couple of very important words. I mean, we were talking earlier about trust. People no longer trust us. We are erratic. Remember, we've talked repeatedly about the United States is now being treated in most of Asia as a sort of patient zero. We're the crazy man at the end of the hallway. Nobody knows what we're going to do next. And then you talked about stability. You know, stability is incredibly important. When you do business with China, the Chinese give you pricing stability. In other words, you don't have to worry that in a year or 2 years, the price is going to go through the roof. You don't have to worry about sanctions being imposed on you. In other words, you're doing business, period. And one of the pillars of successful business is price stability. So if you're in the supply chain, or if you're in production, whatever it turns out to be, this is vitally important. We're not providing that sort of thing. That's the problem. You've got to provide it, and we're not. So, you know, I think, where are we going? I just think, first, you know, every decision that Beijing makes on trade connects to their timeline for reunification. You know, rare earth leverage is a tool to discourage American intervention. They've got us in a hostage situation. In 2026, Beijing understands political cycles better than most Americans. They'll calibrate pressure to maximize domestic division, expect selective tariffs on swing state industries. You know, the AI race is a resource race. If you don't have access to the rare earths, you can't make the chips. If you can't make the chips, you're out of business. Right now, we have no refinery for rare earths, so we can extract it, but we have to ship it to China. 90% of all the rare earths are refined by China. I mean, this is crazy, Dan. We are very dependent on the very people that we insist on treating as the enemy. And then, you know, this is a lot of self-inflicted stuff. You know, over four decades, we've demonized nuclear power. And at the same time, the Chinese built 50 new nuclear power stations. Mm. They've worked steadily. You know, a friend mentioned to me just the other day, he said, you know, we spend $1 trillion on, I think $1 trillion on defense. And we spend $20 on defense, that's fine. The Chinese spend $20 billion on rare earth refining, and they corner the market. That's you can't keep up with 20 billion versus 1 trillion. But we're using the military instrument repeatedly when it's the wrong instrument for the competition.
Right.
That's the biggest problem. We haven't figured out, hey, the world has changed. You know, we didn't pay any attention to who is at the other end of the supply chain, who is producing, who is manufacturing. You know, not just rare earths that are refined, but electronic components and the microchips that come out of Taiwan. there is so much. How do you put this? How do you explain the complete and utter failure to think beyond the end of the next quarter? And that's where we are. The Chinese have been carefully developing and producing a strategic approach over the last 30 years. It's now bearing fruit.